Good morning, everybody. Happy Saltus and happy Father's Day. You're all very welcome to the Unitarian Church in St. Stephen's Green. Those of you especially who are here for the first time and anyone who's watching on the webcam, and even those who might be watching later on. We have a tradition in the church here. I'm a member of the congregation. Remember, the congregation takes what's known as a free pulpit, and it is a free pulpit, I assure you. And at that stage, I must tell you that anything I say is my opinion only, not the opinion of the church or anyone here. And it's my turn today. We give our minister rest. Between myself and yourself, he doesn't get a rest at all because he has got more trouble, let's say, getting us to do the service than he does when he's doing it himself. We come together this morning to remind one another to rest for a moment on the forming edge of our lives, to resist the headlong tumble into the next moment until we claim for ourselves awareness and gratitude, taking the time to look into one another's faces and see their communion, the reflection of our own eyes. This house of laughter and silence, memory and hope, is hallowed by our presence together. We have a tradition here. We light a chalice at the beginning of every service, and I read a prayer over it. So I'll light it first. At times, our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us. And our first hymn today is hymn number 159. That's my favorite hymn. This is our song. Our first reader today is Maeve. Thank you, Maeve.
Good morning, everybody, on this beautiful Midsummer's Day, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers. And thank you, Robin, for asking me to do this reading. The genesis of this reading was formed in Mary O'Brien's back garden during COVID when she invited a crowd of women up for lunch. And I went off on one of my riffs, as I'm prone to do, about wanting, I'll come to that. And Bridget said, Maeve, write that down. You got to use that somewhere. So this is the moment, many years later. This is called Be Yourself, in reference to Robin's address. When I was a child, my prayers at bedtime were very simple. There were three requests on my list. One, I prayed for a room of my own. Two, I prayed for a red bicycle. And three, I prayed I would wake up a Protestant. Deep down, I knew that when born the third of seven children in a family of limited resources pushed the first two out of reach, but I held out hope for the third. But being only 7 years old, I hadn't made the connection that the third prayer, to wake up a Protestant, and the first two were inextricably linked. My best friend was a Protestant. She lived up the road in a similar house to mine. There had been only two children in her family. She had a room of her own, plus her red shiny bicycle, which she had got for her birthday the January before. She also had a mother who looked like Grace Kelly, who wore ironed cotton dresses and was never constantly expecting a baby like my mother. It was all so confusing to my seven-year-old self, confusing and unfair. I have an image scorched into my head from that time. It's a warm summer's day. My friend, her mother, and little sister emerge from their house. All three are blonde. All three wear matching summer dresses. All three have bicycles with baskets on the front, which hold rolled up beach towels. The mother has a wicker picnic basket strapped to the back carrier of her bicycle. They are cycling to the nearby Dollymount Beach for a swim and a picnic. Enid Blyton could have written the story herself. I was stricken. How my seven-year-old heart ached for this Protestant way of life, but it was not to be. Many years later, when we had all grown up and got sense, my friend told me she had envied me my rambunctious childhood. She had envied me my crazy household filled to the brim with children, babies in prams, dogs running wild, kittens in boxes, a budgie in a cage, a tortoise in the garden, my mother, Mammy, always pregnant, always singing in the kitchen, my father doing what all fathers did then, as I thought, escaping to the pub on the way home from work until the young ones were in bed. She envied me my sisters, my little brothers, our house alive with music, card games, piano playing, singing, always something going on. There was I envying her, and there was she envying me. If I'd known all that then, would it have made any difference? Probably not. As the song says, and as Josh so beautifully played earlier, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. Well, as it turned out, I got two of my wishes. I have a room of my own. I have a red shiny bicycle. But best of all, I woke up one day and found myself a Unitarian.
Now we have the children's story. I always think the children's story should be given to us by children. So Evie is going to read the story, which is the title of the whole service today, Giraffes Can't Dance. So Evie, this way please, thank you.
Gerald was a tall giraffe whose neck was long and slim, but his knees were awfully bandy and his legs were rather thin. He was very good at standing still and munching shoots off trees, but when he tried to run around, he buckled at the knees. Now every year in Africa, they hold the jungle dance, where every single animal turns up to skip and prance. And this year when the day arrived, poor Gerald felt so sad, because when it came to dancing, he was really very bad. The warthogs started waltzing, and the rhinos rock and rolled. The lions danced a tango, which was elegant and bold. The chimps all did a cha-cha with the very Latin feel, and eight baboons then teamed up for a splendid Scottish reel. Gerald swallowed bravely as he walked towards the floor, but the lions saw him coming and they soon began to roar. "Hey, look at clumsy Gerald," the animals all laughed. "Giraffes can dance, you silly fool. Oh, Gerald, don't be daft." Gerald simply froze up. He was rooted to the spot. "They're right," he thought. "I'm useless. Oh, I feel like such a clot." So he crept up from the dance floor and he started walking home. He'd never felt so sad before, so sad and so alone. And then he found a little clearing and he looked up at the sky. "The moon can be so beautiful," he whispered with a sigh. "Excuse me," coughed a cricket who'd seen Gerald earlier on. "But sometimes when you're different, you just need a different song. Listen to the swaying grass and listen to the trees. To me, the sweetest music is those branches in the breeze. So imagine that that lovely moon is playing just for you. Everything makes music if you really want it to." With that, the cricket smiled and picked up his violin. Then Gerald felt his body do the most amazing thing. His hooves had started shuffling, making circles on the ground. His neck was gently swaying and his tail was swishing round. He threw his arms out sideways and he swung them everywhere. Then he did a backward somersault and leapt up in the air. Gerald felt so wonderful. His mouth was open wide. "I am dancing. Yes, I'm dancing. I am dancing," Gerald cried. Then one by one, each animal who'd been there at the dance arrived while Gerald boogied on and watched him quite entranced. They shouted, "It's a miracle. We must be in a dream. Gerald's the best dancer that we've ever, ever seen. How is it you can dance like that? Please, Gerald, tell us how." But Gerald simply twizzled round and finished with a bow. Then he raised his head and looked up at the moon and stars above. "We all can dance," he said, "when we find music that we love."
We're going to have our second hymn, 53. I'm not trying to break any records, but this is going to be my reading, the shortest reading ever, I'd say, in the church. It is from the poem by Mary Oliver's The Summer's Day, and I'm going to only read the last two lines, and I believe that people have this stuck in their mirrors and in their fridges and everything like that. So small, iconic lines. "Tell me what it is you plan to do with your wild and precious life." That's the reading. Now, we just have a short prayer here, followed by meditation. And the meditation will be just short meditation, and it will end with Doreen playing a piece of music, for which I appreciate you doing so, Doreen. So I'll start now, and then I'll read a little bit about meditation as well. "It is the language that makes us human. One half of the language is to listen. Silence can exist without speech, but speech cannot live without silence. Listen to the speech of others. Listen even more to their silence. To pray is to listen to the revelations of nature, to the meaning of events. To listen to music is to listen also to silence and to find the stillness that's deepened and enriched. And I've read a lot of books on meditation. We're going to try and do a bit now. But our own minister, I think, wrote the most simplest of it all. And there are books, full books about meditation. This says, the practice itself is simple. Sit comfortably with feet on the ground, close your eyes, focus on your breathing. When thoughts intrude, and they will, return to the breath. That's it. I had a friend who was a primary teacher in Wicklow. It's a mixed national school. And every now and then he'd race the children across the yard and he invariably won. He always won. Until one day, not only did he not win, he was last. And the kids were delighted, of course, and they started calling him a loser. Loser, 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 they said. So when he went into the classroom afterwards, he said to them, I'm delighted for you that you won and congratulations, but I'd like you to know there is no such thing and no such person as a loser. And he wasn't a loser because 2 weeks later he found out that he was early diagnosis of motor neuron disease. And we watched him go from walking sticks to walking frames to wheelchairs to electric wheelchairs. A lot of people with motor neuron disease lose their voice. He didn't. He had a very good voice and he was a very good speaker. And we learned a lot of things from his courage and the inspiration he gave us as he went through this illness for a full 7 years. And yet, of all the things he ever said to me, I always remember him saying, there's no such thing as a loser. And last summer, a friend of mine asked me to go to a school sport. And his daughter was running. And he said, she's entered everything. And I don't know why, but she's actually entered for this 80-meter dash. And I would say without any doubt, she's probably the slowest child in the school. But enter she did. Now, the top three children in this, they give their names and they get hugs from their parents. They give their names and they get into the final. And the others get hugs too as they come in. And the hugging and things, tape was dropped and everything was gone. But this child was still coming up the middle. Now, she could easily have stepped out of the way. Nobody had noticed. But red-faced and embarrassed, but determined, she kept coming. And nobody noticed her until one man shouted out, this race is not yet over. And they all suddenly saw her coming up and they grabbed the tape and they got everything together again. And red-faced and embarrassed and determined, she crossed that line as if a hero. The same man shouted out again, today we have seen the real winner. And he was right. There's no such thing as a loser. Does anybody here know who the dopey one was? That was actually the name given by a housekeeper to a fellow in a family in Germany. I think four or five brothers he had. He was very slow to read or write, and he spoke to himself, and the name stuck to him, the dopey one. His name was Albert Einstein. In the world of Einsteins, I would be the dopey one. So he was down as a loser, and there is no such thing as a loser. Thomas Edison, he was, by the way, his middle name was Al. His mother always called him Al. He got a letter from the school one day. Bring this letter home to your mother. Do not read it. So he brought the letter home. And she opened the letter and she started crying. He said, "What's in it, Mama?" She said, "Oh, Al, this letter says you are a genius and the school could not cater for you, and I will have to teach you myself," which she did. He had very little schooling, and we know who Thomas Edison was, one of the greatest geniuses in the world. There's no such thing as a loser. He found the letter later, and it said, "Your child is useless." I'm paraphrasing now. "Your child is useless. Never go anywhere. We can't have anything to do with the school. Teach him yourself. There is no such thing as a loser." Did anybody ever hear of Easy Eddie? Easy Eddie was an accountant in Chicago. He was very, very rich, very protected, lived in a gated area, had everything you want. And the reason for most of that was he was Al Capone's accountant. And, you know, he knew where all the bodies were buried and all that sort of thing. But he had a son. And he began to annoy him. He said, "I am a loser because my son will always be only known as a son of the mob." So he decided he'd do what he could. So he came state's evidence. Now, if you know anything about the history of Al Capone, he actually went to jail originally for tax. He squealed, he told them all and everything, and they got Al Capone. And that's where he started off his life in jail. As for Eddie, I guess he was shot down in the streets of Chicago. But in a way, he gave his life. He gave his life for his son. One other story too. An aircraft carrier in World War II, a squadron was leaving the flight, and one of the flight lieutenants realized, half of his mistake, they hadn't fueled his plane, and he hadn't checked. So he said to his squadron leader, "I have no fuel, they didn't fuel me." "You'll have to go back," he said, "that's all about it." And he turned back with a heavy heart. But as he approached the aircraft carrier, he noticed 7 or 8 or 9 Japanese Messerschmitts or whatever they were called, coming to attack the slightly diminished in defense aircraft carrier. So he flew at them. He shot 2 or 3 down, I can't remember which, and scattered the others, and they hightailed out of there. And he landed to a hero's welcome on the ship. And his name was Lieutenant Dan O'Hare. Butch O'Hare, as a lot of people knew him as. And Chicago Airport was named O'Hare Airport after him and did become one of the busiest airports in the world for a long time. And if you go from Terminal 1 to Terminal 2, you'll see him there and the medal that the US Navy gave him for the war as well. One other tiny little thing I'm going to tell you about Lieutenant Dan O'Hare, or Butch O'Hare, was his father was Easy Eddie. So there you are. It goes to show you, and Evie has corrected me today, that giraffes can dance. And I remember when I was very young doing physics, we were told scientists have proved conclusively that it's impossible for a bee to fly. Oh God, a bee can't fly. Well, the weight of his body is far too much for the lightness of his wings, so it's not possible for a bee to fly. And I can say, "But we saw the bees fly." "I know bees can fly," we said, but the teacher said, "Yes. But nobody told the bee that he couldn't fly." I'd like to finish, if I can, on a lighter note. Because a friend of me said, you go around saying there's no loser. I'll tell you about a loser," he said. He knew this guy who wanted really, really badly to get into a relationship with this girl. So he truthfully told her, "My father is a very, very wealthy widower. And I am an only child. And I am going to inherit all his wealth." Now, did he get a relationship with that girl? He certainly did. She became his stepmother. Now, I would say to myself, he was not a loser. He was an escapee. So, in the words of 2 great artists, different types, Oscar Wilde, he said, "Be yourself, everybody else is taken." And in the words also of the song of Fleetwood Mac, "Go your own way." Amen. Hymn 76. He's going anyway, thank you. I'm now going to get you a chance to meet the worn-out minister who's having a day off. He's going to give the notices for me. Thank you.
Now, firstly, thank you, Robin, for a wonderful service. Thank you. So please, you're all invited to join us downstairs for tea or coffee after the service, particularly if you are visiting or you're here for the very first time. Please join us for tea and coffee. Our weekly service of reflection in the church continues this and every Wednesday from 1:05 p.m. to 1:35 p.m. The book club will gather this Wednesday at 7:30 in the vestry. Now, those who wish to march in this year's Pride Parade, please put your name and number on a sheet I have here. I'll put it on the table. You can sign it after the service. The parade will begin on O'Connell Street at 12:30 p.m. And we will meet as a community at 12. And we'll meet at Dr. Quirky's, which is just past the GPO. Now, there's been confusion in past years. So on that side of O'Connell Street at Dr. Quirky's. We'll be in the red zone, if you can remember that. And we will march, as in previous years, behind our beautiful Pride banner, which declares that we believe that a person's gender and sexuality is something to be respected and indeed celebrated. And then on Sunday, next Sunday, will be our annual Pride service. So you are all welcome. Please tell your friends and family. We'd love to see you here. Inspiration is the magazine of the non-subscribing Presbyterian Church, which we are a member. And there's a new magazine, and it's full of Unitarian stuff. So it's on the table outside. Please, as Bridget says, please give it a home. Thank you. And finally, something personal. I'd like to welcome home my godson, Shane, from a wonderful trip to Vietnam, where him and his classmates built pathways and roads for local communities. So welcome home, Shane. And finally, thank you again, Robin.
Thank you, Gavin. When I was young in Cork, I played rugby on a Sunday morning, and there was a mass that was known as the rugby mass because we all got it over quickly. And maybe that's a little habit I've gone into. So you're all going to get out a little earlier today. Who said thanks? Thought I heard someone say, hymn 118. The courage of the early morning's dawning, and the strength of the eternal hills, and the peace of the evening's endings, and the love of God be in our hearts. Amen.